Welcome to the Ad Tech Marketing Podcast, the only podcast exclusively devoted to ad tech marketing, among other topics. As Bill O'Reilly once said, F it, let's do it live. How's it going? Adam Remsen and Bill Verzel, you're the Chris Ryan and something else to my Bill Simmons. I haven't decided yet.
I am in an F it mood, man. This is the day before July 4th weekend, and it's just a free-flowing moment I'm having right now. So let's go. Let's just go.
Okay, getting loose. I was thinking that Adam could be the Joe House to my Bill Simmons, and Bill would be the Chris Ryan. I don't know if that means anything to you guys, though.
It does. Honestly. I know who Bill Simmons is, but I'm happy to do whatever Adam isn't doing.
Well, actually, I was about to say Bill's like, I've never seen a sport, but that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, I played baseball till I was 15, 16. Some of the happiest moments in my entire life were spent on a pitching mound. When you're pitching and it's going well and you know what you're doing, it's one of the greatest feelings in the world. There's nothing quite like it.
I just moved to Miami, as you guys know, and so I've been playing tennis like five times a week. And I was catching up with my mom yesterday. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm doing, you know, I'm playing all the time. And I'm like working with a new pro and he like fixed my serve and all stuff. And she said with a critical tone, you sound excited. And I was like, whoa, am I not allowed as an adult to be excited about my hobbies? Like, I feel like the key to happiness as an adult is actually indulging your childhood hobbies.
I just saw this phrase. Did I mention this to you, Joe? Hobbyless behavior. It's a German phrase to describe people who become obsessed with things like bad reviews of a movie that they liked or whatever. Mm. And they just get completely down a rabbit hole of rage and yelling at people online. And the Germans call this hobbyless behavior. Go get a hobby. Yeah, and a hobby, it does not count if you're watching a TV series. A hobby is a thing you can get better at.
Yeah, you know, and this is actually, I ask people a lot what their hobby is because I find it boring to ask them what their job is. And some people will reply shopping to me. And I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think so.
It's more of a hobby. I don't think you can get,
now, if you said I collect shoes of all the Armanis from the 1960s until now. Okay. I'm there. But don't just tell me you'd like to walk down Fifth Avenue and buy stuff. You're just a consumer at that point.
Well, I'm like, all I know is I'm like, look, today I was hitting my backhand slice short and it was staying really flat and skidding through the court. And I was like, that's extremely exciting. And I'm like, look, if I'm not doing that, it's basically this. And then like, you know, I got to have something to talk about when I go on dates.
Yeah, you have to have something to do that so that your whole life isn't helping executives express themselves. So speaking of hobbies, you know, what we do in some ways is make a hobby more palatable for people who should be treating it as a professional thing, but often sort of treat it as a hobby. And I think that's our topic, isn't it, Joe?
Our topic for today is, are all AI posts bad?
Right.
But I have very like rapidly evolving thoughts on this because so when AI like hit the scene and exploded in popularity and like late, I think it was 2023. I was initially somewhat averse, right? And I think a lot of writers were, because all of us, like the three of us, you know, you guys were both journalists, Bill worked in publishing. We all spent a lot of time honing the craft of writing. And then it was like, people were like, look at this bot that can write stuff. And we were like, no, but it's really bad. Like, you think it's good because you don't have taste in this thing that I've spent, you know, thousands of hours of my life developing taste in, but actually it's bad. But then AI got a lot better, right? Mm-hmm. And it continuously has. And now I would say AI has like dramatically raised the floor for writing. There are a lot of people who couldn't express a coherent thought in prose before, and now they can go to AI and they can very easily construct something that's passable. The problem is we're now entering a new phase where everyone has realized that. And so they are all using AI to create these passable, but not very impressive and often overly sort of lengthy and cliche posts, especially for our world of ad tech marketing on LinkedIn. and to a lesser degree, Twitter, which we can also talk about the difference between those platforms. So now I'm actually coming back around after having mounted defenses of AI writing and being like, look, I use it. It can be really helpful, et cetera. I'm now starting to become skeptical again. And I'm wondering if like human all the way is actually going to be the path to differentiation. Adam, what do you think?
I agree with you. I think you missed a stage that I went through, which I didn't like it. It was not great. And then it got a lot better. And then I started to feel threatened by it. Right. And and that was the stage. I was, oh, my God, everyone's out of work or no one's going to have a job. And then I started to see the cracks. There are lots and lots and lots of cracks. So like whether it's cliched writing or whether it's cliched structure, which I think is what a lot of people really complain about, it's starting to just look like, you know, as I've said to you guys before, it's just made mediocre better, but it's just a new definition of mediocre. This is what we got on our hands. I think it all kind of does suck now. And that if you really want to be the best posts that I see today are the ones where someone is just sees something funny or something interesting and just slaps it up there, writes something really quick that is undeniably human. And that's the ones I see get the most amount of replies.
Well, Adam, as chat would put it, those aren't cracks. Those are cavities.
They're not
just mediocre. They're the worst thing anyone has.
They're also atrocious.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. Like the three of us and clearly a number of other people are sensitive enough to writing that we are noticing the sameness of these posts. And at this point, you kind of get, when I get into a piece, you know, two paragraphs in, I'm like, I'm out, because I don't even care what story you're telling me. I don't even care what this is. I don't want to read this because it feels exactly like everything else. And so I do think that a reaction against that, you know, that becomes more human. As soon as we can fake humanity, we've got it made.
And that's the thing, Bill, the length piece, and, you know, Adam was touching on this too, is really important, I think, because what I've started to notice is AI has like a length that it loves. It's like medium length. Right? It's not like super long and intensive and nuanced, but it's never pithy. And so that is what I think is happening is like, and funnily enough, maybe I'm part of the training data that has encouraged this, you know, because it's like, that was always my favorite length, right? I was like, it's like long enough to kind of get into it, but it's not too long that no one's going to read it. But unfortunately, I think AI is so fond of that structure and length that now whenever I see a post that length, especially if I see one indication that it was AI generated, I'm like, I'm out. And so I think there is going to be this like, and I was saying this on the previous pod, I think there's going to be like this barbell of like media structure where it's like, on the one hand, you have super pithy, off the cuff, short form. And then on the other hand, you're going to have like really long, intensive, nuanced posts, but those have to be like superb for anyone to notice. Yes. That.
For anyone to care. I mean, it's an old saying, brevity is the soul of wit. And a lot of people have pointed out that AI is not good at wit. You know, it just isn't good at humor. Like, I think it's worth putting the time in to make it pithier, but that actually takes time. And it reminds me of the old Winston Churchill line when he said, I'm sorry that the letter I've written you is so long, I didn't have time to write a short one. We should be taking time to write shorter, pithier, quicker things, which are also, frankly, more readable as people are scanning through.
And what it's also not good at is being novel. I mean, it's very good at writing a press release, because there's been 5 billion press releases written before. Mm. And that format is not going to change, right?
Right.
But like, you know, like music, for example, like anything novel is a reaction to something that came before it. So if punk rock was a reaction to disco, and if new wave was a reaction to punk rock, and if grunge was a reaction to new wave and pop, then you can never, if as long as AI is going to be looking in the past for its inspiration or structure, then you can never ask AI to write a pop song that's going to work, you know, that's going to work today. And you can never ask it to write an original sounding LinkedIn post. So yeah, like, I mean, if the topic of this is, are all AI posts written bad? Well, if bad is mediocre, then yes.
Well, yeah, that's well said. And I'm glad you mentioned press releases, Adam, because you're homing in on what really matters, which is AI is not original, right? Necessarily, it's reproducing what has been done before. And so press releases are an example where actually AI does a very good job. I think if you're not using AI for press releases, that's just freaking stupid.
And I agree.
Press releases are like a formulaic document that just are meant to convey the news. They're not going for style. They're just like, what is happening? You know, can a journalist seize the like who, when, what, where of the story? And then can they write their own story that might be more original or have input from different people? So I think press releases, because they're supposed to be formulaic and not invent on form, can be generated with AI. But what we're talking about more when we say are all AI written posts bad is thought leadership or sort of personality driven, you know, social content in particular. And on that front, I think either all AI posts are bad or you need to like prompt them very carefully and then like edit them very thoroughly. And the problem is, obviously, when we use AI to write for our clients, that's the standard we try to hold ourselves to. But the random people on LinkedIn who are just like going to AI and then putting something in there and then letting it rip, they're definitely not doing that.
One aspect of what AI can do, at least in my experience on chat, has been a little bit oversold, which is the idea that if I give it a bunch of examples of this person's writing, it will give me something in that style. I may be hitting the wrong prompts, but in my experience, I'll say, do it in this style, and I'll give it 20 examples, and it'll give me something that sounds like every other LinkedIn post. And do you guys have better luck? Do you have that kind of stylistic flair? Do you see that?
It gets like a little bit better, you know?
Yeah.
You can train it a little bit, but it's not to the point where it's going to stand out.
Yeah.
I agree with Bill that it's very stubborn. Like,
yes.
Actually, yeah. On style, it has a style. Which is this, it insists on it. I totally agree. Like we have clients for whom we write regularly and I will try to get AI to mimic their voice or their style. And it is actually pretty good at bringing in their ideas. Like it synthesizes ideas very well.
Yeah.
But on the style, it so wants to take whatever the client's style is and shove it into like this, like staccato, choppy, style. And I like tweeted the other day, I was like, I now spend half of my professional life saying to AI, less choppy, and it just does not want to hear me.
You know, if you ever want to really see how like a peek into AI's flaws, ask it to write dialogue, because like I tinker with a screenplay and I've got all the character sketches and all, you know, everything there's tons and tons of background material on it. And I've fed that into ChatGPT and then been like, okay, I want the scene to kind of go like this. And like, and then was just experimenting with it really to see how it would do. God awful. Like just about as bad as anything could possibly be. You finally see, the robot. It's like when the robot takes the faceplate off, you know, and the sparks are shooting out of the circuits. It's like that. It completely broken at that point. That's where it's not human. And that's where, as you guys were saying, the voice, it just all gets mashed into just it sounds like the same person talking to the same person.
And it's funny because that is a disappointment, right? Because that was part of the promise. And when it first came out, they said, you can just say, write something in the style of Stephen King and you'll get that. And maybe that's true in Stephen King's case. I have no idea. But it doesn't seem to learn very quickly if it doesn't have maybe 25 novels to build from.
Definitely that's part of the question, is the amount of volume it has to train on, right? So Stephen King would probably, if it's going to nail anyone, it should be able to nail someone like him. But I also think, Bill, it's that in that initial phase where people were getting excited about its capacity for mimicry, we were all less savvy interpreters of its work. And so as Adam was exactly right in the beginning, there was like a hype phase where it's like, first you're averse to it. Then you're like, oh my God, this thing can do anything, you know, because you haven't been trained yet by repetition to see the cracks. And then once you see the cracks, you can't unsee them. But where does this leave us, do you think, in terms of like marketing specifically and like marketing in our niche, but also just in general in terms of like media?
I guess I'll start, and I know Adam will have some excellent thoughts. I guess my thought is that ideas matter as much as they ever have, and that as Adam was pointing out, the AI does not generate novelty. So if you come to it with a specific idea, it can give you a fairly quick Tracy or LinkedIn post or whatever. The idea is really important at the beginning, and it's also going to be, it's increasingly important that you edit. And I think one of the things that I notice is very few people edit. And I think part of that is, you know, we've talked about this, and some of our clients will feed our good copy into the wood chipper of AI, and then they will come out with something that sounds like a robot, and our client thinks that's better because they're so used to seeing those kinds of posts that they think this is what a professionally written post now.
Right. Because it has polish. It has a polish. And I understand that they're thinking, okay, this is very polished. But the problem is the polish has become so standard that it reads as unoriginal and redundant, and people are likely to glaze over and just skip it. So I agree, Bill, that ideas are going to be more important. The other thing that I think will be more important is personality. I think about, like, you know, Terry Khawaja, the founder of the investment bank Luma, he and I have always really seen eye to eye in terms of marketing philosophy. And like he will say, part of what he built his investment bank on is having a personality and just being public and being funny and joking around. Right. Because most bankers are just boring as hell.
Right.
And no, like people are like, oh, effing bankers, you know? And it's like, I think that orientation is going to be more important than ever.
Yeah, 100%. And every time I think about bankers, I think about the Paul Volcker line that a banker is a man who walks around haunted by the possibility that somewhere someone is happy.
I thought you were going to say someone is making more money than he is.
Well, that works too.
Yeah. Also, just so everyone knows, Bill has already dropped like 6 illusions.
In this
conversation. And these are my conversations with Bill. We'll have like 50-minute phone conversations. And he's just like, well, as you know, so-and-so said this. I'm like, I definitely don't know, but I'm glad you told me. And maybe one day I'll internalize it and then I will.
Well, the thing is, Adam brings expertise to this conversation. My understanding is I'm only here to throw in those things. So I got to throw them as often as I can.
But I'll say one more thing. You said, what did we say? We said personality.
I was saying ideas are really important and editing is very important. And a lot of people don't edit because they see the thing that AI does and they think, oh, that looks great. That looks better than I could have written it. I'll just run it. It's like I won't get fired for buying IBM. I won't get fired for posting this.
Right.
And they don't realize it. It's totally soulless because they're not used to distinguishing what is soulful.
Yeah, writing isn't their craft. Like we're the hacks who spent, you know, our whole life friggin' writing articles.
Reading
a lot. And writing articles for others. And so we noticed the minute differences. But yeah, most people don't. Adam?
When you said ideas, I love that. And it reminded me of a cousin of ideas, I think, which is constraints. And when I say that, I mean that, like, I'm not a fan of art where it's like, everything is art, man. Like, just do it and it's art, you know? It has to be like on a canvas, or it has to be following the rules of music theory, or it's got to, because that is what makes good art, is the constraints of it. It's how creative can you be within the constraints of it, right? So if you tell AI what the idea is, and also give it constraints, it's got to be 50 words or less. Don't tell it to be pithy, because it's not going to be, right? But tell it what the concept is, and then you can sprinkle the humanity back into it again. I'll still use AI, as much as I might even agree that all AI posts, written posts are bad, because they are. But if all AI written posts with some humanity can be good, and that's where I land on that, at least.
Maybe all unedited AI pieces are bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Bill, you also said something really important, which is this mindset that I'm not going to get fired for writing an AI-generated post because it'll have that polish. It'll sort of be, you know, professional seeming. I think that a problem there's always been in the sharpen approach to marketing is that you know, we suggest that people go directly to their audience. They be out there evangelizing their company. They're writing on social. They are displaying their personality. People want to follow people. So like, be out there. Don't do the corporate thing. Don't do the polished thing. And you'll generate more business and awareness for your brand. That's always been hard, precisely for this reason, that people are afraid, right? They're afraid. Adam's, you know, afraid that if he goes out there and it's just slinging takes on LinkedIn, Joe's going to be like, yo, what the hell are you doing? These takes aren't approved by the Sharpen HR department, which is definitely a real department with people I employ. And so if you're going to lean into this like post AI approach of like idea driven, provocative, personality driven, more than ever, you need CEOs who are like, I want you guys to do that. And I'm okay with it not seeming like super professional or polished. And guess what? 99% of companies, not going to do that.
Right.
And that's a really good opportunity, because if you are like the Terry Kawaja of your sector and you're out there being personality driven and like unguarded, you're going to stand out.
And that's why so much business flows to Terry. It's he does quirky things. And even if like some of his jokes don't land, it doesn't make any difference. Everybody feels when he starts talking, something fun is occurring, something unusual. There are weird sound effects. I'm paying attention. I was at a conference recently where he spoke and people were rapt with attention, 100% paying attention, because they didn't know what was going to come next. And that's kind of what we're saying. The problem with AI is you know what's going to come next. Part of what flatness means is there's a structure. And as soon as it says it's not this, it's that, you're like, oh, geez. And you start to fall asleep. And part of what's interesting is if you can make the piece surprise us, but many pieces do not. And as you said, it's an opportunity for those who are capable of it.
It's still a people business, and it's still a community that we're all in here, and is the truth of it. And this, and AI actually separates us. It doesn't make us come together at all. I mean, I think about the thing that whenever I think about Terry Kawaja, I think about he did that Get Happy video, right? And not only was it goofy and funny and timely, because that song was kind of big around that time, but he also went around to everybody and got them on camera to do the mouthing of the song as well. And he wrote original lyrics to it as well. And, you know, it was hilarious. And like, that brought people together at Cannes, made them sort of laugh at themselves a little bit. You know, I mean, part of that whole video was saying something like, how do we justify this boondoggle? You know, well, we don't. We just come here and just indulge. And there were people, somehow he got people to like, yep, we are. We're all full of crap, you know. And that was like funny, you know. And so, and that's what he was doing with that, was bringing people together. And if you're not relating to people, you're not doing your job when it comes down to writing.
Yeah, I think that also CEOs, who are Terry's audience and primarily our audience, they like candor and they like sort of humor and this sort of real approach. Like, have you ever emailed a CEO? Like, they generally are not the most polished people, actually. Like, they can be if they have to be, but they're the ones who are like all lowercase, like, yeah, let's do that. Right. It's the middle manager who is like, dear Joe, it is my estimation that like we should do X, Y, and Z and like whatever. CEOs are like, yeah, sounds good. Or they're like, here's my problem with that. And they just say it. And so I think this candid approach, like I noticed that, I've always noticed that on Twitter versus LinkedIn, that LinkedIn, I read a lot of like marketing managers. And if you want to speak to freaking like freelance writers, oh, well, you find, you know, a plethora of them lounging around LinkedIn. But on Twitter, you get CEOs and founders, because it's not, again, it's not full of slop. It's not full of that, like people pretending to do work or have takes or whatever. It's just like actually people like slinging takes about, you know, the ad tech industry or making jokes, which we all just enjoy as humans and so on.
Yeah. Well, you ever see athletes on Twitter? It's like at the press conference, they're like, well, it's all about teamwork and, you know, the coach really helped us out. And but on Twitter, they're like, I beat his ass. They're all over that. So that's the difference, man. It's the forum, you know, is a big part of it.
So do you think we can make LinkedIn safe for humor? Can we change the forum, or is the forum just, does it constrain CEOs' feeling as they look at it?
So I've been trying to switch up my LinkedIn approach, because my historical LinkedIn approach has been very serious and sort of like pedagogical. Like I'm like, okay, I'm sharing best practices. Some would say didactic, which is a less nice word for pedagogical.
They'd say pedantic.
Right, yeah, exactly. Pedantic, and right. You know, you can take your pick, and all of these things have been said in the past.
That's what all three of us said.
Right. And so I'm trying to mix it up and go shorter. And I'm not doing any AI generated content on LinkedIn and Twitter. And I am trying to like mix in humor, throw in observations. But then even if I have a point, because again, AI has like ruined like the 7-paragraph post. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, if I can say it in 3 lines, I'm just going to say it in 3 lines. And I don't know. So far it's been going okay.
But from a client point of view, I mean, if you try to be funny and then say, hey, I wrote you something funny, you know, that has to reflect their own personal sense of humor at that point. And so they're never going to go for it, you know? And so, you know, in our case, like a lot of times I'm trying to talk people out of thinking that this is a personal reflection on them and that this is really just a tool for their company and you're just a mouthpiece for it, as far as LinkedIn is concerned, at least. And, you know, Twitter could be a totally different story, but as soon as we start like writing on someone else's behalf, boy, we better be locked in with exactly their personality or they're going to reject it every time. So I don't know how we get around that, you know?
Yeah, that is an interesting point, is that as a ghostwriter, unless the person has a humorous orientation, it is hard to inject a lot of humor. But I think what we can do, Adam, is I think what we're going to do is, yes, still do some of those more polished posts, you know, still use AI to generate some of them. And then, of course, prompt and edit it carefully so that our clients don't sound like everyone else. But also throw in more of like the human written 4-line post. I think like that is something we should do more of and not do as many of the long posts, because I don't think anyone's like reading
them. No one's reading.
Right. And I think part of the reason they don't read them is they feel that they got the point after line 2. So if there are 4 lines, they'll read all 4. But if it's long and they're like, okay, I see where this is going and I got to get on with things.
And in a sense, that is what social media is all about and what the sharp pen marketing philosophy of like using social as the primary communications channel is all about, is like with a byline, you know, you have editors of trade publications who are like, they're not going to let you publish a 3-line byline. Right. They, for some reason, even though we have the internet, we still observe like the shibboleths of the like old school publishing, right? Where it's like, it has to be 500 to 800 words. It's like,
why?
It's not in a, it's not on a paper, like a print column, but that's what they do. And so part of the advantage of LinkedIn should be precisely that we shouldn't feel this conventional pull according to which like we must write, you know, 500 words to have a complete idea.
It's a really good point.
Under 100.
Did we solve it? Did we just like solve AI and
marketing? So one of the problems with going short that I can foresee is people would think maybe you didn't work very hard at that piece.
Right.
Maybe it's not worth very much. And so you have to sort of explain what matters here is not the length of the piece, it's the quality of it and whether it resonated with people or not.
Winston Churchill quote again, please.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually thinking of Annie Dillard, if you don't mind. You know who?
I knew it would be something.
Peter's Creek. Well, because she told a story. She was in a cab once, and the driver sang a song that was incredibly long. It was like 10 minutes long. And at the end, she said, "Do you really enjoy that song?" And he said, "Well, no, but it took me so long to learn it. So I have to sing it because it's like." But that's not what the song good, right? It's not how long it is.
And that's the big distinction between marketing and media, like the real shit that like is whose value is determined by the market, and just smuggling in some pro-market ideology and like a college essay, right? Like that's like we always say, like with marketing and media, it's like, Bill, like when you were being trained as a journalist, Adam, when you were being trained, like we all went through this where like the first time you're like, how long should the piece be? And the editor says, how long does it need to be? Right. It's like, does it need to be 4? No. And even then there were constraints as we were just talking about, but it like, it might be 400 words. It might be 1200 words. It depends on like, whom do we need quotes from? What is the, you know, story that needs to be told, et cetera, versus sort of the college approach of it's like, this must be 4 pages to show that you put enough effort in. And I think it's the same thing in marketing nowadays, right? It's like, A, it's like, did it work? Right. Did it express the idea and did it reach people? Did they respond well? But B, the other thing I would say is that you can do more, like, and you should do more. Like, another thing I've been thinking about that we might try with clients is, like, if X is a way to inject yourself into the industry bloodstream, maybe we just, like, instead of, like, ideating for 30 minutes, like, you'd have to have a very particular kind of client to agree to this, but it's like, why don't we go through your X feed and just find interesting shit and just come up with stuff on the fly? Because that's what I do. Like, as a power user of X, who, like, built my professional reputation on that platform, like, that's what I do, is I just go through and I just go off the cuff and, like, respond to a bunch of people. And that's how I actually, like, market myself. And so I think that type of thing is actually truer to the process of how you generate a following on a platform like Twitter than being like, okay, we're going to ideate something and write like three posts in a vacuum.
I 100% agree. Commenting on other people's posts, I mean, Joe, you know Miles, not to drop name, I'll skip his last name, but he's great on Twitter. And, you know, whenever I comment on anything, just, you know, because, not because I'm being strategic about it, just because something occurs to me, that's when I get invitations on LinkedIn from those same people in that same group. And so I would tend to agree with you that that's probably how we're going to move the needle with the executives. But then they have to do it. Like, so we have to, I guess we have to send them a link. So the thing we want them to comment on and tell them what to write, and then they have to turn it around quickly.
Well, I'm thinking almost more that the future of, like, organic social for clients might be like, if it's not like hand me the reins, right? Which of course some people do, but it's pretty rare. It's like literally spending the time as an agency or a like full-time social writer for a company, like sitting with them and being like, let's just freaking brainstorm some shit and comment live. Like, cause that, again, that is just truest to like what actually marketing yourself on social networks looks like.
So what versus, but during the meeting.
Yeah.
Versus yeah, like a session. Right. So you have some people that you target. You go, let's go see what this guy's posting. Let's go see what this woman's posting, so on and so forth. And then let's just riff on it. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's like jazz, man. That's like,
yeah, exactly. You're going in the studio. We're going in the studio with Dr. Brazil.
You know, there's something else I'm thinking about, which it was sparked by what Adam said about Terry at Cannes, putting all these other people on the camera and how much more effective that is. Like how it made the video not about Terry, but about Terry's engagement with all these people. It just looked like a party, looked like a blast. And it might be a really good practice for us to every other post, we specifically call out some other exec and at them and just say, you know, so-and-so said this, I have a slightly more nuanced take, or I agree with this part, but I also think this. And that if you do that, it's kind of like commenting on the post, except it's your post. And then that person and their contacts are going to see it. And
I think you're onto something, Bill, because I think that's also organically what happens when you're actually immersed in these platforms. Like, just you realize it's like a group conversation. It's like you're all in the cafeteria, right? And you're just like, and that I do think that is actually sort of how new personalities are minted in ad tech, is that I think like it's not like a lot of like the Silicon Valley tech ecosystem where it's like, you know, people who have these like product-led growth motions and their products go viral and whatever. Like ad tech products don't go viral. It's like someone who has like 20 years of experience in the industry, like hawking it to their friends. And if you don't have those 20 years of experience, then you gotta be on commenting on the LinkedIn or Twitter posts of the people who do have 20 years of experience, because that's how you like get in the club, and then your company gets on the media plan.
But it is about an appetite. I know CEOs, I guess in theory, don't have bosses they have to answer to. But at the same time, like if it doesn't ladder up to their specific business agendas, then it takes a little bit more convincing for us to start writing on their behalf. Like, you know, the other day I saw somebody posted some weird meta, like there's a picture of some weird meta glasses thing that had some microphone in front of it, and it was ridiculous looking. And then they just wrote a simple thing that said, I have some notes. And then I wrote underneath it something like, but great for the Knight Rider reboot. And I posted a picture of like Hasselhoff in a car, like, you know, whatever. I'm just joking around.
I got three invitations from that, you know, just alone, because someone is going to take, oh, he's a funny guy. Right. Maybe I'd like working with him. And, oh, I right. see he's been around a few places. And so I'll do. That's the connecting point, right, is this charm, humor, pithiness, right, that has nothing to do with their business. But I'm imagining a couple of our clients in my head right now and going like, yeah, wouldn't it be great if we just done a posted some weird, you know, pictures from the 80s on oh, boy, I don't know. It's good.
This is like what's happening, right, is there's a shift from institutions to individuals, right? So in the past, it was like, it would all be the, you know, insert company marketing department. And now I think it's much more about, no one pays attention to that because there's so much of it. It's impossible to cut through. So the question becomes like, is so-and-so at that company someone I would want to, right? And it's much more personality driven. And that's what we're talking about, is adapting the marketing approach to the current state of media, which requires exactly what Adam is describing, which is like being out there, being a human. You know, when I was describing this pod to our team earlier today, like one of our team members was like, there's really no risk, you know, like it's just the downside is just our time. And she was like, yeah, but like, what if it's embarrassing? And I was like, that's the case with all public content. Like that is essentially the inhibitor to having a public intellectual footprint, is people, and like that is the truth, whether people admit it or not, because it sounds like a concern like a teenager would have. But we all have that inner teenager. And really what's stopping so many people from being out there is this fear that like, if I put myself out there, if I try personality-driven marketing and like show the world who I am, are they going to like me?
Are they going to like me? Here I am back in
the That's really
again. I know.
It's true. That's really what it is. And like, but what I'm saying is that unless you have a truly odious personality, and there are some in ad tech, and those people can be, you know, hidden by their staffs, it is actually by being yourself, as a high school drama would instruct you, that you are going to make gains and meet people and drive business for your company. And it's definitely not through doing like faceless corporate marketing or putting out like a redundant AI generator.
Yeah, I would only correct you with one thing, is that I think odious works actually online. I think it's more just like mediocre,
boring is the word.
Flat, yeah. And yeah.
Oh, no, that's true. There are odious people who actually do at least get a lot of attention. Whether it's good or not for them is, I think, a bit more complicated.
Well, one of them's in the White House, so it did get him that.
Oh, boy, we're going there, huh?
Bill is like, Joe said we can be raw and unedited. He's like, at last.
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, it almost makes me think we should sort of incorporate some of these practices. I mean, we're talking about like going shorter. Maybe we have a goal that like every time, if we write four posts for a client, one of them has to be one sentence or two sentences max. And we just force ourselves, as Adam talked about the constraints. I'm remembering with the Vanderhooks, one of their, I think it was Chris who wrote, we said our earnings went up, and he posted what happened to their stock that day. And that was his whole post. And it got the biggest engagement for months because it was very funny and very relatable, and everybody got it. And it in no way harmed their brand.
And very honest, right? It's like when you're a public company CEO and you're crushing expectations and then your stock is going down, like there's no need to be cagey about it. Like everyone understands you don't like that and would prefer that the stock went up. But making fun of it in the way Chris did is a perfect way to generate attention, actually draw attention to the fact that you did beat expectations.
Yes, your earnings did go up.
Right.
Yes.
If you had just gone on LinkedIn, if Chris Vanderhoek from Vine had just gone on LinkedIn and been like, you know, we really crushed earnings, here's how awesome we did, like people wouldn't have cared as much. But instead, he made it a joke and he made it kind of vulnerable and people loved it.
Sorry to do this again, but George Plimpton said the best stories are about losing. And the reason Vanderhoek's tweet or his post got so much attention is because it was about him being frustrated with something. And I do believe that that's part of what we, when we get glazed over from some of these LinkedIn posts, is that they show no vulnerability. They do not show losing. They declare victory. You know, this isn't just an improvement. It's a revolution. It's blah, blah, blah. Whole mic drop persona thing, that it turns people off. And I mean, I don't know. I suppose some smart person will program the LLM to insert vulnerability, you know, into the post. And whoever does, it will suddenly get more engagement until, you know, until we adjust to that too. And then all vulnerability feels fake. But I do think that people, like you said, Joe, if Chris had said, hey, we crushed it. We're awesome. You know, his closest friends will say, good for you. Everybody else is like, how does that in any way affect my life? But if you tell me that something frustrated you, well, I get frustrated too. And I can relate to that.
I think there's something to be said too for these like vulnerable, like this vulnerable approach to content marketing. That's just like being more human, being more personality driven, more unedited. Like I was saying to the team earlier today, like when talking about the idea for this pod, like there is no podcast I listen to where I would not actually want more of that. Like there's really no podcast I listen to. And I listen to like a solid dozen where I'm like, you know, they got to button it up. Like be more serious, be more on topic. It's like, look, if they're doing the, like, we're shooting the shit in the beginning of the episode and I think it's boring, I can skip forward 5 minutes. It's fine. Yeah. Like most of the time I laugh and I think it's interesting. And I'm like, I like these people, because you don't actually listen to any pod for any enduring amount of time unless you actually genuinely enjoy the virtual company of the people involved. And if it's ever boring, you skip it and you get to the meat. Right. So I think I just think the huge opportunity is almost no one will take this advice. This entire podcast that we just did, like, might as well for 9 out of 10, like, corporations, just put it in the trash. They'll never do it. It's not their identity. It's not how they operate, because you really need a CEO who encourages that. And most CEOs, either they're not going to be with it or they're just not going to think about it. And they're not going to take the time to sort of like set that agenda for the company. So I believe like human driven storytelling is going to be, you know, always has been a big opportunity, but especially in the AI era, it's just going to be a massive opportunity.
I was going to say, it sounded like that's where we were going. So yeah.
Bam. Adam's like, my work here is done. I want you all to know also that before earlier today, I was like, this is going to be unedited and raw. And Adam was like, great. I want you to know I will be doing zero preparation. And he did beautifully. Don't you think?
Another. Yeah, you know, I can BS with the best of them. You know, I'm ready.
We're professional bloviators. We're take sleeps. Yes. You know, it's what we do.
One last thought that I had while you were talking about that, Joe, and just thinking about our teammate who said, what if you say something embarrassing? A lot of my favorite people, just like a lot of my favorite podcasters, when they say something embarrassing, they own it. And I'm thinking of Ari Papero does this all the time. He'll say, 6 months ago, I said this was never going to go anywhere. Well, I was completely wrong. Here's where it is now. And okay, you know, and he just does it. And there's absolutely no one who hears that and says, oh, Ari Papero admitted a mistake. He must be not worth listening.
Yeah.
The opposite, that you're like, oh, I can trust this guy because he'll tell me when he ends up wrong.
Yeah, it's part of intellectual honesty. You're going to say all sorts of shit. Some of it might come true, some of it might not, but you're definitely going to hear. Thank you very much, people. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Bill. Adam has a hat. It's very exciting what's happening here, and we will see you all next week.
Take care.